Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri. Each week, I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today is episode number 312 about the Wounded Warrior Project with Tom Kastner.
I think it's pretty straightforward. You know, our mission of honoring and empower warriors, we provide programs and services for post 9/11 ill or injured veteran across a whole breadth and depth of areas to help them with their physical health, their mental health, and their financial health and wellness. And, there's more to that, and I think we're going to get into that a little bit, but at the top level, and all these services are absolutely free.
What I appreciate most about my conversation with Tom is his authenticity. After 30 years in the Army, it took Tom a while to find his new home in the civilian workforce. While he was able to land incredible opportunities, general manager at Mercedes-Benz USA, senior manager at Amazon, academic dean at St. John's Northwestern Military Academy, each of these proved to be a poor fit for him. I respect Tom's willingness to talk about what this process was really like. The frustrations, the disappointments, the uncertainty, these are all challenges I've faced in my own career and challenges other guests have experienced as well. Yet Tom brings an openness to this conversation that I found refreshing. More importantly, the new home that he has found is incredible. Tom's career journey has led him to work as the Financial Wellness Vice President at the Wounded Warrior Project. I have to say I was extremely fired up about learning more about the work that the Wounded Warrior Project is doing. Not only are they providing an incredible support to the military community, but they're also supporting other organizations in a way that is broadening their impact on the military community. Every veteran would benefit from learning about the Wounded Warrior Project and their mission, and I hope you check them out after this interview. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, a text transcript of this interview, and over 311 other episodes just like it. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Tom. Joining me today in Jacksonville, Florida, my guest is Tom Kastner. Tom, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you so much, Justin.
Well, I want to give a very brief bio on Tom, and we'll get into his background much more extensively, but he is the Financial Wellness Vice President at Wounded Warrior Project. He started out at West Point. He served for 30 years in the Army after that, including serving as the Director of the Dean's Staff at West Point. His career since the Army has included times at Mercedes-Benz USA, where he worked as the General Manager for Learning and Performance. He's worked at Amazon, at St. John's Northwestern Military Academy, as well as other locations. He holds a Master's of Arts in National Security Studies at the Naval War College, as well as a PhD in Industrial Engineering at Georgia Tech. So Tom, maybe to start things off, anything you'd like to add to that that brief bio?
Well, sure. I mean, I won't go into excruciating detail. I mean, probably a few more details about the military experience, because it was, for me, kind of a tale of two separate careers within a career. The first third of those 30 years I spent at tactical infantry unit levels, performing the kinds of jobs that all infantry officers do coming out of a commissioning source. At the end of that first 10 years, I had to make a decision on how I wanted to pursue the rest of my military career. So I opted to what the military calls single track. So I went into functional area operations research, which is what allowed me the flexibility to earn the advanced degrees, which I'm very grateful for having had that opportunity. So then I went into what I'll call the analytic army, or the analytic business of wearing the uniform and supporting operations and strategy, but more in an analytic role than a tactical or operational role.
That's great. You know, one thing that hadn't occurred to me is that we always focus on the show about the transition from military to civilian career. And you're pointing out that many of us in the military have transitions within the military of one focus area to another. So I think it's great that you pointed that out. Well, maybe to start things off, could you take us back, you know, after 30 years in the military, Take us back to what that transition was like and what ultimately led you to Mercedes.
Oh, this is a kind of an odd story. So you've had on your program a gentleman named Steve Cannon, who at
yes.
the time was president of Mercedes-Benz. Outstanding leader. I'd say a good friend of mine. You know, we don't stay in contact a lot, but the long and short of this was I was looking for academic senior level administrative positions as I was transitioning out of my job at West Point. It kind of made sense. I enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed all that involved, developing, working with young people. And you know, maybe this sounds boastful, but I thought I was pretty good at it. So I figured, well, what the heck? Surely there'll be schools and universities out there that will be welcoming and opening their doors to me as I applied. And I found that not to be the case. So I had to take a step back. And then my phone rings and Steve Cannon is, hey, Tom, how'd you like to come to Mercedes-Benz and lead the learning and performance group? I hadn't applied. It was out of the blue. He called me. And literally within a span of, I would say, 2 weeks, I had gone to interview with some folks at the senior level, because it's right there in Montvale, New Jersey, so it's a short drive from where West Point was. And I was asking folks, am I supposed to take this job or not? And the answer was just say yes. So I said yes. And so I landed a very good job with a great company. Obviously, Mercedes-Benz has got great brand recognition across the globe. And there I was. So I was learning a performance. And so I went about the business of doing that job. I very much enjoyed my team. But what I learned within about the first 3 months is I was bringing a military context for training into an environment where selling cars, competing with the BMWs and the Audis of the world and the Lexus of the world was the goal. And I reported directly to Steve, the president of the company, in my capacity, which had its benefits. But my takeaways from that, from my year at Mercedes-Benz, I was trying to use this military model of training, thinking, well, we want to make technicians better. We want to make the sales personnel across the dealerships better. But I wasn't listening, right? I wasn't listening to what the organization needed of its learning and performance group. And combine that with, I was hesitant to want to go to Steve or other senior members, and in some cases I didn't know to whom to speak with, to try to get guidance. So I was in a little bit of a cloud. Great company, great organization, but I was too impatient and too reluctant to connect with folks who could guide me. And so that's why my tenure there was, you know, I made the decision after a year to depart Mercedes-Benz. And looking back on it, you know, I learned some valuable lessons in that connection. And first and foremost is just don't be afraid to ask people questions, and don't automatically assume as you transition from a uniform context to civilian that you can bring with you all of the interpretation and meaning of the word training and how it applies. You've got to listen. You've got to be more adept at adapting to the organization's needs rather than thinking you know them up front. And in the end, I'm probably not a great salesperson to begin with, even though training was kind of behind the scenes when it came to that. So, but I really enjoyed the experience and I grew a lot in that 1 year.
I mean, it sounds like that was an incredible training experience for you. And I think that you're highlighting a couple challenges that most veterans will face, which I imagine is like changing that communication model towards learning and a little bit potentially more collaborative than we're used to in the military. But also I love that thought of being open to communication, which is also seems like the there's a lot of communication differences between the military and the corporate world. So that's exceptional that you highlight both of those.
Well, I didn't have the confidence to speak with any kind of authority about the business of selling cars and how that training fit into that. I was open, but I just was not aggressive enough, I guess was the way to take. And you know, even to the point of accepting the role, I hadn't prepared for any of that. So I figured, well, wow, I've got a ready-made job. It's the compensation's good. It's a Mercedes-Benz. You know, it's a wonderful opportunity. And And of course, I trusted Steve Cannon totally. And so if he was showing his confidence in my abilities, you know, I had to reciprocate and say, yeah, I'm ready to go. So I jumped on board.
I love that too. When you say that, it makes me think of when I was on submarines, most of the people I worked with, when they got out, they took jobs that were nearly directly using their skill, but on the civilian side, government contracting and things like that. And I think in that case, it's probably, you know, they used to joke, you would take your uniform off one day and the next day you'd be back at the same job, but in a suit and tie. And I can imagine after 30 years, the assumption that so much will be the same in that next job. But I love how you're highlighting the importance of that growth mindset and that learning mindset and being open to those changes. And I think, I imagine what makes that the most difficult, or what for me has, is that you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what the differences are, and it can be really difficult to uncover, okay, what are the cultural differences, the communication differences, the leadership differences in this unique organization?
And you know, you hit the nail on the head. And each organization has a different set of communication, cultural norms, and all those things come into play. So the best solution is to go transition into a career that fits, the culture matches good, you've got the right skill sets, and it can be a long-term solution for your post-military work, right, your career. As you can tell from my resume, that didn't happen to me. I'm retiring as a colonel in the United States Army. I've got good education. You know, I'm not even feeling or experiencing the same kind of challenges that other military members do when they transition. So I was kind of in a good place. And even after knowing my start point, I still had a little bit of a roller coaster, as we know from my resume. Yeah.
I think one of the best pieces of advice I got at business school, though, was don't use 3 years to get a year's worth of experience. And a corollary to that was like closing doors is just as important as finding the right door. And it seems like who knows, if you had chosen a different organization directly from the Army, maybe their culture would have been in a way such that your style would have been perfect there. So having, you know, in my view at least, having a year to learn these things and then figure out that there might be a better fit, in my view, that's kind of a year well spent versus staying somewhere too long trying to make it work or realizing it's not a fit or not what you want. So I think that's a great part of your story. And, you know, I wonder, you know, from there, you've worked at the New York Military Academy, Amazon, St. John's Northwestern Military Academy. What would you, I want to be able to get onto the Wounded Warrior Project, but what would you want listeners to know about your time at those organizations and what those transitions were like?
Well, I should just be blunt and directly honest about the New York Military Academy position. You know, after leaving Mercedes-Benz, I really didn't have a game plan. So I was thinking I could get back in education development, and I thought it lent itself well to being right there at New York Military Academy. So that's why I entered into that. But for several reasons that maybe we don't want to discuss here. You know, just suffice it to say that I was probably not as thorough and mutually transparent and investigative during the interview process to recognize that there were some disconnects between me and my potential boss that I didn't recognize. So, I mean, and that's okay. I mean, that happens. But new experience for me. The Amazon experience was amazing. And you know, Amazon's a whole community of its own. We all know about Amazon. Very fortunate to be able to compete for and be selected to do work there. The team dynamic is amazing. It's a crazy, creative, dynamic, intensive place to work. And you see the results of your work every single day. And so people will say, well, Tom, why did you leave Amazon? You know, why would you walk away after 2 years because it's difficult to get into Amazon, or so I'm told. But I was drawn back to St. John's because I wanted to get back. I had the opportunity there to be president of that school. At least that's what the conversations were about. And so I made the decision to leave Amazon and pursue that. And I still think it was the right decision at the time to do that, but we never know what the future holds, and circumstance can change, and to some degree we can't change or control those. To some degree we can. And so after the 2 years at St. John's, I realized that it was probably not the best place for me to be, and that opened the door for Wounded Warrior Project. So I mean, I don't know if that all makes sense. I mean, I think the learning there is, for me, after a 30-year military career, I wanted to be comfortable in my own skin, doing work I knew that I believed in. I really thought in those school environments that I was there. I mean, it's almost like every place I was, I could convince myself that that was true. I'm comfortable in my own skin, and I'm doing a good job at Mercedes. I'm comfortable in my own skin, I'm doing good work at Amazon. To others who look at my resume, they go, Kastner can't hold a job. This guy, you know, he's not employable because his resume looks like you know, he's running the bases or something. And I remember having those conversations with some other senior leaders, friends of mine, and it struck home with me. So I took a step back, and I reached out to a couple folks and said, you know, what do you think? Well, you know, where should I land? What do you think, having my experience base? And of course, the question was, do you want for profit, nonprofit? You know, what do you want to do? So my conclusion was, I've tested the education environment, and it both at the college level and at the boarding school level, and that didn't seem to pan out the way I thought it was going to. The for-profit world was great, but I thought, you know, why not try nonprofit? And then the suggestion was made to look into Wounded Warrior Project.
And I just want to point out for listeners, I think that Tom is being more candid and transparent than most people. And I'll go out as far to say that in 300 interviews, Tom's experience is more representative than not of what most people's careers are like. And I feel like sometimes it's like mountain biking where it's rocky and it's rough and there's no trail and you fall off and you get these scars and you learn things. And then people, when they retell their story, they plaster it over to make it seem like they're on a freeway and everything's smooth and premeditated. But at least in my view, this is just my opinion, especially coming from the military, I don't think there's a way to find, if you're really earnestly looking for a career that's a calling, that's a deeply compatible fit, I don't think there's any shortcut other than what Tom just talked about of trying something, being really brutally honest with yourself, and trying something else, and having the courage to keep on trying, and treating a career like a buffet where you can kind of sample things and, hey, this tasted good for a while, but it doesn't serve me. And I know that for myself, a lot of the military mindset that works against me is this sense of I'm in it to win it. I'm in it for the long haul, and this desire for certainty of this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my career. And at least my experience and most of the people I've had on the show, that is not the truth. And Tom, I just really appreciate, I think it takes courage to be open and honest like you were in describing what that process was actually like, rather than paper macheing over it and trying to pretend that it's something else.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, you're very kind to say that. It just, you know, we, you know, I wanted to, along the way to say, well, this has got to be someone else's issue. It can't be my issue, right? It's the fact that I can't seem to find a home in any of these places. So you have to take a step back, and you have to be self-critical. And you know, the truth is that there was interaction on both sides that was probably less than favorable. So, I don't think that makes me a bad person or a bad employee. I think that what that makes me is someone who's still trying to find the right, you know, fit is kind of overused, but, you know, the right connection at the mission level, at the culture level, and of course, my skill set. I mean, that does matter, right? I mean, I'm not going to go be a banker or something because, you know, I'm probably not in a position to do that. So, and oh, by the way, you know, my wife of 32 years is moving, you know, 30-year Army career, we don't move that much. And then across the next 4 years, we're moving from New York to New Jersey, back to New York, to Seattle, Washington, to Delafield, Wisconsin, and then to Jacksonville, Florida. So she thought she was done picking up and setting up households. Well, we thought we were done setting up households. That's not just her responsibility, but you get my point, right? So there's you can kind of get into a selfish world where I want to go make a lot of money, I want to get famous, that's not who I am, and I got caught up on that a little bit. So I just had to take a step back. And so that's Wounded Warrior Project was the perfect solution for me.
That's great. That's great. And we'll talk about in a second about how you became involved, but let's fast forward just a second. If you ran into another veteran on the street who had never heard of the Wounded Warrior Project, how would you explain what the organization is, what you all do?
I think it's pretty straightforward. You know, our mission of honoring and empower warriors, we provide programs and services for post 9/11 ill or injured veteran across a whole breadth and depth of areas to help them with their physical health, their mental health, and their financial health and wellness. And mm-hmm. There's more to that, and I think we're going to get into that a little bit, but at the top level, and all these services are absolutely free. Mm. So there's no cost for a warrior or a veteran who falls into that category to register and at least become informed about what is offered at Wounded Warrior Project. And we do this, thankfully, due to the great generosity and stewardship of our Americans, right? Folks value enough the service of the wounded, ill veterans to provide the foundation that allows our organization to do all this.
And I got from your team and your website some numbers I just want to share with listeners around this, where more than 52,000 servicemen and women are physically injured in recent military conflicts, and 500,000 are living with invisible wounds from depression to post-traumatic stress disorder, 320,000 experiencing debilitating brain trauma. And so these are not... this is not a tiny problem. This is not a niche solution. This is a massive problem for both our country as well as our military community. And, you know, just as an outsider, my perception is the Wounded Warrior Project is at the forefront. It's certainly one of the most notable organizations charging headlong into this massive problem to try to find a solution. What was it that led you from your career path to join this team?
I think first and foremost, it was mission and understanding that my 30-year Army career never really put me in harm's way. I mean, the timing of it was in parallel to a lot of the things that were going on. And by the time I was even remotely connected to it, it was more in a staff role. And so, you know, I don't apologize for that one bit. I just think that's the way that some careers go. So this will sound a little bit trite as well, but it was my opportunity to serve those who have served and, you know, gave up a lot more than I did in that process. And so I wear the hat of, you've got to be thinking about current and future programming through the eyes and lenses of those who need those programs and services. And that's what I do as a financial wellness vice president. I've only been in the seat a little over a year, so I'm, of course, still learning to do that, but it's just to be sensitive to that. So the mission resonated with me, and it is a no-nonsense organizational commitment to that mission. So if ideas and efforts do not collide and align with that mission, then we don't give them a lot of time and effort, actually. So
and having served in the military, having served in for-profit, having served in education, do any differences stand out around now that you're in a nonprofit? You've been there for just over a year. What stands out to you as different from your previous experiences?
You know what, that's a great question. In many ways, this company is run and operates and functions at a professional level that is, not that nonprofits are not professional, but as a for-profit company. I mean, we have great policies, we've got great standardization, structure, organization, and vision, and we're focused on that. And the culture is one that reinforces that every day. You know, we've got core values, we're mission driven, and we're pleasures to work with. most of the time. And that connects us quite simply to the mission. And so in a similar way, it's a company and we take our jobs very seriously. We're very professional about what we do. But all along, we're focused on the recipients of our services. And we never forget the fact that without the generosity and the caring of a donor base across the country, we're not able to do this, right? I mean, to spend $200 million on programs in a single year to support the folks that you mentioned earlier, you know, you just don't do that unless you have this committed, caring donor base.
And that's, I hope that gives also listeners a scale. Like this is a well-established entity. Like you're talking about these numbers to run an organization with that sort of budget, with that size personnel, with that sort of impact. That is on the scale of the organizations that Tom has worked at previously in terms of complexity and challenge. And so I want listeners to know too, because we haven't had a lot of nonprofits on the show, maybe 30 or 40 in the grand scheme of things. But oftentimes it seems like nonprofits meet the need of a veteran for a very clear purpose, a sense of contribution. And at the same time, it can scratch that itch for growth and challenge and development and all these other things that you would get in a traditional for-profit job. So you can blend those two together. It is possible.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about, I said at the start, your title is Financial Wellness Vice President. Could you talk a little bit about what that means and specifically give people a sense of what your day-to-day life looks like?
Oh, sure. So the portfolio for Financial Wellness consists of three main elements. The first of those is the VA benefits team. And we are a veteran service organization in that regard because we have credentialed service officers. We have the team number 68 across the country, and their jobs are to process VA claims for benefits for warriors. And sometimes those are simple, sometimes they're moderate complexity, very complex, and sometimes they go to appeals. And so it's that whole process of guiding, coaching, working with warriors through that, what can be kind of an intimidating playing field of trying to file a claim. So that team performs that role specifically. The Warriors to Work team is about half the size. They're actually two-thirds the size. They're 42 in strength across the country, and they do exactly as the title describes. They work with employers in local communities and connect the warriors to jobs where we have a high likelihood of fit for skill, for culture, for interest. And we pay a little closer attention to the work environment, the work expected of warriors, and making sure employers are sensitive to and understand that while they may be ready for the workplace, there might be certain life factors that require special accommodation or something like that for warriors. That's not often the case, but for example, a work from home job might be better for a warrior than going to work in a warehouse or something like that, or driving a truck, as an example. And the last third of the portfolio is our resource center. Our resource center is the gateway into Wounded Warrior Project. It is some might call it a call center, but our coordinators are really more than that because they're knowledgeable and mindful of all the programs that we provide. And on top of that, we arm them with an informational database that can actually reference warriors to external programs in local communities where warriors live to help them get the help that they need should our programs and services not be able to fill that void. And we have an emergency financial assistance team, which folks call in and they are in dire need of money for rent, utilities, or something like that. It's a one-time access program. And then we have a registration team. And the registration team registers warriors to make them part of our database, to make them now accessible to all of our programs and services. And the total number of members on the financial wellness team equals 159 across the country. And we're probably one of the largest, the alumni team may be a little bit bigger, but that's one of the largest of the almost 700 teammates that make up Wounded Warrior Project.
I love that last piece about the resource center, because one of the largest complaints I hear from the military community is there are over 21,000 organizations out there to help me. How do I figure out who's out there? And if I'm understanding, like what you're describing is a way in which veterans can talk to a human being, talk about where they need support, and talking to someone who knows the landscape, who can either help you directly or point you in the right direction. What an incredible way to pierce through all the noise, to try and slice through and spend hours and hours figuring this out on your own. That's like literally, if someone described what they wanted, it's like, why can't I just talk to someone and figure out where to go? You're describing
Yeah, I mean,
exactly that.
it really is, and not to cast a shadow on this to any degree, but there are unique circumstances where we'll get phone calls in the resource center of folks who are in bad places, and it takes a special person with calm and presence to be able to handle that. At the same time, they're trying to figure out and triage to a degree what kind of a service would be in the best interest of the person calling in. So it's a wide spectrum. Those are infrequent, by the way, but it does happen. But by and large, yeah, they're very knowledgeable folks, and they're pretty much tied to their phones, to chat rooms, to email during the course of their days.
You have a tremendous amount of knowledge around the state of veteran employment, and I wanted to give you space to just kind of talk about, just I know it's shooting from the hip a little bit, but any trends you've seen recently when it comes to employment?
Well, first thing I want to applaud is that the Wounded Warrior Project is one small element of a nationwide effort to connect veterans with quality jobs that will improve qualities of life. And I think there's a danger if we allow ourselves, we can get caught up in this competition to be the ones that gets the most placements or the most connections. And while we do hold ourselves accountable for our productivity, which is an important that, going back to your question about nonprofit, for-profit, holding ourselves accountable is an important aspect of what we do. Probably more connected with a for-profit company than a nonprofit, but we want to be a teammate and a partner to other organizations with like minds and like efforts to help find veterans jobs. So what are the trends? I think the trends are unemployment is decreasing because we focus laser beam on the veteran population in general. We're Wounded Warrior Project, of course, the Wounded Warrior population, but as a national team, we are helping veterans get jobs and keep those jobs sustained over time so that they're not like I was coming out of transition having to do four jobs in 6 years. Because that stability is huge towards this goal of financial wellness. I think the other thing is that there's a vast variety of jobs available to veterans, and maybe a college degree is not what's required, maybe some special IT training. So the community is becoming more flexible in recognizing the preparation and skill set needed, and making sure that we help the veterans communicate that to potential employers. And we're coming a long way in that regard.
That's great. I mean, to your first point, I definitely even feel that with Beyond the Uniform, with this podcast, is it's like the aspect of competition that drives us to be a better organization, but then also the realization of like, man, we are all in this to help veterans. And so competing with other podcasts or other people in our space, it's like there's some area in which that doesn't serve us as an organization. And it's also great and refreshing to hear that. I feel like often when I hear about veteran employment, it's with a lot of sadness or a lot of fear. And to hear that things are starting to move in the right direction is really encouraging for me. And I hope, especially for those on active duty, you take encouragement that we are turning this around as a country. We're starting to get better at this.
Well, I can give you some specifics. The Institute for Veteran and Family Members out of Syracuse University is got a lot of momentum right now with a program called Onward to Opportunity. We don't have the people and necessarily the time and the space to be able to host their week-long seminars that they do. Their cohorts are 25, 30 people. We host them here in Jacksonville and some of our other larger offices, but it's not our program. But what we do is we provide funding to help the IVMF with this armor of opportunity, as an example, USO Pathfinder. I could name a lot of other organizations in the emergency financial assistance realm. We provide grants to Operation Homefront. And so it's a broader sense where Wounded Warrior Project cannot directly fill a program need for a warrior or for veterans of the post 9/11 era. We will of course vet carefully, but we will reach out and say, hey, we'd like to support the effort and the program that you provide because you're helping us fill gaps in the programs and services that we're not able to provide. And so that's that collaborative effort, and it's reaping benefits because it's no longer a furrowed brow look when you walk into a joint session of employers and nonprofits trying to help find jobs for folks. It's now come sit with me. Let's have a chat.
And I'd love to zoom in and take a deeper look at the Warriors to Work program. I know you already gave a description of that, but what else do you want listeners to know about that?
We made a little bit of a paradigm shift in Warriors to Work here in the last 18 months. And what I mean by that is we have relied heavily on what I'll refer to as a preparation empowerment coaching model. And then we turned it over to the warrior, him or herself, to go out into the local communities to try to sell himself, herself, make application for jobs, what I'll call an indirect placement is how we refer to it. The shift was we went to direct. And what does that mean? That means we're asking our leaders and our specialists who are working, doing this tough work with warriors day in and day out, to get out in the communities, find out what's out there. We consolidate jobs that we know are matching the credential and the readiness and the interests of our warriors. So we have to know our warriors better. It can't be a passive model. It's got to be an active model. And it's taking time for specialists in the leadership team to embrace this because it's a 90-degree turn is what it is, if not more. But we know that approach has a higher likelihood of success for sustained employment to keep people in jobs longer because we're doing the heavy lifting up front to create a fit that will last. And the warrior gets a say, and we're also quite honest and transparent with the warrior though too. You know, a lot of times folks will say, yeah, I want to be a CEO or I want to make $180,000 a year or something like that. And you've got to bring the person back down to reality and say, okay, let's find a developmental job where maybe that can be a goal 5-7 years from now. But for now, let's get you in the pipeline because, you're ready to start in that role. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. You know, what's coming up for me is this sense of going back to your own story. If you had started this interview and told me, like, I got out of the Army, I got this great job, everything was awesome, I feel like I would trust the advice of someone with that experience a lot less than someone who had challenges in the transition of finding what was right for them. And what I love about that with you and the members of the broader team in taking that perspective and mindset and experience to helping them find the right job, it sets a realistic expectation. It's not like, hey, we're going to wave a magic wand. You're going to be happy for the rest of your life. It brings an element of truth and realism that makes me more confident that the people you're helping are going to find the right job. Or if they don't, they're going to have the right attitude to keep on going after it and having that courage to keep on pursuing it.
Well, it's very true. And Wounded Warrior Project, we value very highly this connection between the warrior and the employer. It's, we're working with some foundations and grants right now in the IT space to provide an A+ certification for warriors who are interested in getting that as a stepping stone to other IT work, maybe whatever their interest might be. To give you the example of to how detailed we get, a young lady on the West Coast, a single mom, wanted to attend the in-class seminar we were hosting in San Diego for this IT Ready A Plus certification. But it was a 60-mile one-way commute to get there. She had daycare expenses, and I could go on. So what we did is we found a way to help offset some of those expenses to pave the way for her to attend. Not only did she attend, she got her certification immediately and landed a job very quickly thereafter, a job that provided her the kinds of flexibility. Now, I'm going to be honest about this. You know, she's not a high-level IT technician running a network or something, but she's interacting with customers. She's doing the work that the A-plus certification allowed her to get, and she's quite happy now. So she has steady employment. She's making the kind of money she needs to make, and a single mom of two children is now in a better place because of that. So that's kind of what the direct placement model has brought us to with regard to our warriors and employment opportunities.
I love the creative problem solving in that it's like, you know, every person is unique. They want different things. They come from different backgrounds. And I love that creative solution of helping her get this done. That's exciting to me. It's not like this cookie cutter approach. It's really collaboratively working to find the right answer for that unique individual. I wanted to ask about, in my mind at least, and feel free to change this, for listeners, there's probably three different buckets in which they might interact in some way with Wounded Warrior Project. One would be someone in the military, someone getting out, someone who needs help in whatever way. If you could maybe speak to them about a next step that they could take. I'm imagining a bucket of person who really likes the idea of working in a nonprofit or specifically at Wounded Warrior Project, so being part of the team, if you could speak to that. And then I'm wondering about the group of people who may just be fired up to support an organization like Wounded Warrior Project, how they might donate or support in some way your mission.
Well, those are great questions. So I'll take those in order. Mm-hmm. So the first one is just contact a resource center. Go to the website and the big button says, you know, register, contact resource center, and the resource center folks will address any questions you might have. No obligation. You don't even have to sign up if you don't want to, but you can immediately get information about that, of all the Wounded Warrior Project is and what we do. The answer to your second question, we have a website called Cool Careers for Wounded Warrior Project. You go to any Google search, Cool Careers, and it will highlight a United States map, and it'll give you a number of vacancies, and you can drill down into those to know exactly how many vacancies we have. We do get a lot of applicants for working at any one of our 15 offices, brick and mortar offices across the country. The answer to your last question is there are all kinds of events happening all across the country all the time. I think some are more prominent than others. Last year, we started something called Carry Forward, which is it's a 5K event. For all you speechers out there, it's really not designed to set personal records. So I just want to say that up front. But it's a race to illustrate what Wounded Warrior Project is all about. We just had one in San Diego, and we had 200 volunteers show up to help with that. On September 21st, we're going to have one in Nashville, Tennessee, volunteers, and then we will have one in San Antonio in October, and then finally on Veterans Day weekend here in Jacksonville. So that is one way to do that. I think the other way to do it is to go into the website and get into community events, and you can connect that way for volunteers. There's a way to navigate into that for volunteers and folks that want to get connected. I mean, you're not in our, right now folks are not in our what we call a post, which we announce events and things like that. But the website will allow you to get in and to see what's available in your communities so that you can come out and see what we're all about.
That's awesome. I know that we've only got a couple minutes left here, and I want to give a little bit longer to this last question than I normally do. Normally, I end with just asking either what have we not covered that you want listeners to know, or what are some final words of wisdom? But I want to give an extra space because I know there's so much that you do as an organization. We probably didn't cover every piece of it. So we've got, you know, 5-6 minutes left here. I'd love to turn the mic over to you to hear anything and everything that you want to make sure listeners know.
Yeah, I would love to. I think I appreciate that opportunity. We've talked about financial wellness now, so I'm going to kind of set that aside. I'm not the expert in these other areas, but I'm very excited to share things that are happening in our physical health and wellness portfolio and our mental health and wellness portfolio. Mm-hmm. And I'll start with physical health and wellness. We're very focused on trying to improve the health and quality of life potential for warriors. And that means weight loss. That means adaptive sports. And adaptive sports, of course, that's what it says it is. It's allowing those who don't have full use of all faculties to be able to come and participate in sporting events. Many of us probably remember that as the Special Olympics, but that's we're opening doors there to provide opportunities for warriors to participate. We are doing studies with warriors, and we have soldier ride, bike rides, all kinds of activities to promote health and wellness. And we measure how well we're doing, whether it be weight loss or other type areas. We provide personal coaching models to help folks after they have a weekend seminar so that they can take those lessons back with them. And we do a 60, 90, and I believe it's 180-day coaching model out from those. So that kind of covers physical health and wellness. The alumni team works hand-in-hand in the portfolio of PH&W. They host events. It might be a picnic. It might be a bowling. It might be a top golf. It might be whatever it is. It's an opportunity for folks to get off their couches, get out of their houses, go meet other warriors, share experiences. And that connection is hugely invaluable and therapeutic for them. For many, it's a start point. And we get letters all the time, comments all the time. You saved my life because you got me to go to one of these events, and that caught fire, and now I'm involved in X number of program things. And the other area where we've made major strides is mental health and wellness, and I think the centerpiece of that is our Warrior Care Network program, which provides aggressive outpatient clinical care for PTSD, TBI, the folks that you mentioned early on in your introduction. And we've partnered with 4 medical centers across the country, Rush in Chicago, Mass General in Boston, Emory in Atlanta, and the UCLA Medical Center out in California. These institutions have committed, and we're funding them for a 5-year period. They've committed to provide this aggressive outpatient care for our PTSD wounded warriors. And the nice thing about this is they're helping us with the education and the research and the data collection around the difference that their protocols are making in the lives of these warriors and their families, so that we can then share that. And that's probably a very exciting part. Other parts, I mean, I could talk for a long time about mental health and wellness.
Let me just chime in one thing on this. I love the number of events you do and all the different locations. And I think that across the board, one of the number one things I hear from veterans, both wounded and people who don't view themselves as wounded, is how much and often unexpectedly they miss their connection to the people they served with. Have they missed that family? I experienced that. I did not think I would experience that. I definitely did. And so I think that's a great thing for listeners to take action on, is to just try it out. There's like no risk. Go to one event, see how that feels to be involved. If you don't view yourselves as wounded, great, go anyways. View it as an act of contribution, but like get plugged in, get connected. If it doesn't do something for you, you don't have to do it again. You've lost a few hours, you lost an afternoon. But my guess is that for most people, you'll find that that unexpectedly fills a need. It really hits home and adds value to you. So sorry to cut you off in between, but I want to hear what you were saying, but I wanted to just chime in really quickly before we move on.
No, you're absolutely right. And you never know how that is going to multiply. You just don't know how that's going to project forward for the warrior. It's pretty amazing how that works. And the last thing I'll just talk about is we have Talk program. Talk is you just want to talk, you know, and this is in mental health and wellness. So it's, and the Talk team, they're probably a step up in the clinical ability to understand and carry on conversations with folks. So for any reason, folks don't have anybody to talk to, they talk, and sometimes that's a serious mental health challenge. Sometimes it's not so much, very successful program. And the other aspect of mental health and wellness is what we call Project Odyssey. Project Odyssey it's an excursion, but it's done with purpose and teaching, and it's therapeutic. It's about recreating self-awareness, understanding strengths and limitations, gaining the resilience and confidence and courage back to deal with an aspect of a warrior's life that may not be going very well. We do them in three formats. We do married couple odysseys, we do all female odysseys, and then all male odysseys. And it could be, going to a ranch, it could be skiing. I'm not the expert to know exactly what they are, but 3 to 5 days in length, and it's part of a longer 90-day program to where we do follow-up and a lot of times we connect warriors with other aspects of our program portfolio that they need, and they were just not, Odyssey was the first step. Odyssey was, come share, come be emotional, come just let it all hang out with other warriors of like kind, and that's the first step. So it's helping.
Awesome. Well, Tom, I appreciate, first of all, your taking the time to speak with us today. I appreciate the honesty that is so refreshing that you brought to the conversation. And I'm grateful for the work that you and your team are doing. I know it's having it's making a massive dent in the world and for good. And I appreciate it's exciting to hear. It almost feels like a spotlight where you're shining a spotlight on these hospitals and helping them help veterans. It's I love this approach because it seems like you're having a bigger impact by not just doing great work yourself, but empowering other organizations to do great work. And I think that that's really awesome. I think that so often for me, it's all about what can I do in my little kingdom. And you guys realize, I'm guessing you realize that it's like, man, this is such a big problem. We can't do this alone. And therefore, we're going to have great partnerships and we're going to empower other organizations because we have to be in this together, shooting in the same direction. And it's really awesome. And for listeners, in the show notes at beyonduniform.org, I'll have links to everything we discussed and encourage you to check out, to take on as a challenge. We've listed so many different ways that you could be involved to, as an experiment, try it out. Just to, I have no skin in the game here, but to say, just try it out. If it doesn't work for you, great. Just like Tom shared his own story of trying out different jobs and being willing to move on, to adopt that mindset, to try one of these things out. You may be surprised. You may end up sharing it with someone else where it changes their life. You never know. So thank you so much, Tom, for your time today.
Well, I very, very much enjoyed it, Justin. I appreciate the chance to talk about something that is so valuable. And I just want to say one more time, thank you to all of America for their unbelievable generosity in fueling our mission.
Surface. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team, she writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.